welcome to episode 217 of Board Game Blitz, a podcast about all things board games that you can listen to in less time than it takes for your computer to finish downloading updates when you have something you absolutely need to get done right now. Board Game Blitz is sponsored by Gray Fox Games. This week, we're talking about our ever-evolving gaming preferences. First, we discuss a couple games we've played recently, Cyberpunk Unfolds and Skull King. Then, we talk about the ways in which our taste in games have changed through the years. And now, here are your hosts,
Ambi
and Crystal.
We have an announcement. We have some new merch. I know a few episodes ago we talked about how we are now on TeePublic, so you can click the link in the show notes to get to our TeePublic website where you can get t-shirts, stickers, and other stuff with our logo. But I made a new design that's not our logo. It's about the 10x10 challenge, which is a board game challenge created by Sarah Reed. She actually gave us permission to, and requested, to make a design, a t-shirt about the 10x10 challenge. So we thought of an idea. I completed the 10x10 challenge and all I got was this shirt. So like I made this little text in the shape of a meeple, and there are two options, a rainbow one, which I have here. If you're watching the YouTube version, you can see the picture now. There's another one with black text and like a white meeple around it on any color shirt. So you can go get that if you've completed the 10x10 challenge.
Or if you haven't, technically. I mean, it's not like TeePublic is gonna like verify that you've done it. Although that would be really like it's already like if you wear that shirt in public, people are going to be like, what's the 10x10 challenge? And then you get to talk about board games, which is great. But if you haven't done it and buy the shirt anyway, the conversation will get exponentially more weird.
Yeah.
So if someone does that, please tell us. Because like, I like the shirt design. I am the one that told Ambi I wanted it to be rainbow ink, but I've never done the 10x10. So I can't buy our own merch, like legitimately.
You gotta do it. You still have... What, like 4 months?
I could do the 10x10 with games that are on Board Game Arena. Like that, yeah. I could easily do, especially some of the games that I can play solo on Board Game Arena, like Challengers or Fruit Picking or things like that. But that to me, that's not in the spirit of the challenge, right? I don't know, whatever. But yeah, go over to our merch site and pick up some new merch, friends.
Yeah. Recently, I played Cyberpunk Unfold's pop-up mystery escape game published by Key Enigma. So I got this as a review copy from Key Enigma. We've gotten review copies from Key Enigma before. They make thematic escape room type games that are take-home escape rooms that are mixed with web apps, usually. And so this was similar. Cyberpunk Unfold is a cyberpunk-themed escape room where you're like, actually, I don't really know what was happening in the story, but it was some like cyberpunk themed thing and like some weird corporation stuff. Anyways, the concept is it comes in a little folded up paper thing and you unfold it a little bit at a time. You're like opening it and then unfolding it and like unfolding it a little more. And I don't want to show too much in the video because there's spoilers.
That looks really cool though.
Yeah.
For our audio listeners, like that's neat looking.
So the whole thing is like a small package the size of a CD box, which you might not know what it is, I guess. I don't know.
But, like a jewel case.
Yeah, a jewel case. Yeah, so it folds out. It's kind of made out of really flimsy cardstock though. So sometimes when you're unfolding it, it's not easy to keep together because you're not supposed to unfold it too much and it's supposed to like fold to a certain point and it kind of has instructions. So at each step, it has a little video showing you how much to unfold it. So you know how much you're supposed to unfold it. But then sometimes it like falls back down or like some parts are falling and some parts were like unfolding prematurely. So that was kind of fiddly to work with. So I was actually kind of disappointed by Cyberpunk Unfolds because I felt like the unfolding part didn't actually add anything and actually made it kind of harder to work with. The game itself, like the puzzles, if you've played other Key Enigma games, it's kind of similar where you have a web app and then you have like some physical stuff in here, but there's less physical stuff than other Key Enigma games I've played because it's just like in this small little box. So there's like the unfolding and then maybe some stuff that you punch out. And then there was like a web app where you chat the answers and that's also the hint system. I've mentioned before with Key Enigma, the hint system is kind of annoying because like it's a whole chat and it reloads if you like try to give a hint and you have to wait through all the text. So you had to do a hint and then you had to do like the next hint and wait for the text because it's like an AI talking to you, pretending that it's a person talking to you. And so that can be kind of annoying to try to get a hint if you want like a hint the third step down. So you have to wait through all of that. And also like some of the for this specific one, some of the stuff was kind of buggy. Like some of the puzzles didn't work. Like it said to enter in this one text box, but that text box didn't work and you're supposed to enter it in another text box or something. Like I had to go to another chat to do a puzzle and then I go back to the initial chat and then it like reloads and does all the chat again. It's like, and then some puzzles were a little unclear. Some of the other puzzles were good and like I enjoyed those, but for the most part, I think I was hoping that I would like the puzzles a little more than I did. Like I like the other Key Enigma games better than this one. Yeah, so for Cyberpunk Unfolds, I don't think I would recommend this. If you want to do an escape room and you're interested in Key Enigma, I recommend one of the other ones that I've mentioned before, like Whizcape Academy or Kalinasu Adventure. Those are like bigger box games with more physical things, which is what I like. But then like the physical things were less fiddly because of the small form factor of this and it's like flimsy cardstock, the things kind of fell apart easily and I didn't like the physical aspect of it as much. They also have another Unfolds, like in this series, pop-up type escape room that they kickstarted recently, I think. That one might be better because they probably learn from maybe, I don't know. But yeah, like I don't know if I would want to do the folding ones. The gimmick sounded cool, but like in practice, it didn't work well for me. So yeah, that was okay. Cyberpunk Unfolds. What's the whole thing? Pop-up mystery escape game.
You gotta love the subtitles, right?
Yeah.
Well, I recently played a game that I have actually played many times over the past 5 years, but I've never formally reviewed on the podcast. I first mentioned this game on the podcast during the 2019 Blitzies. So technically it might be 4 years ago that I first mentioned it. And I mentioned it as one of my favorite new to me games at that point. And that is Skull King. Skull King came out originally in 2013, published by Grandpa Beck's Games and designed by Brent Beck and Jeffrey Beck. It is a trick-taking game, and while a lot of trick-taking games can only usually accommodate up to like 4 players, Skull King is unique in that it can handle up to 8 players, and the cards you incorporate based on the number of players can vary, and which ones you want to use might vary as well. But this is a game that I had heard people talking about for years before I first played it and then played it and realized why everyone talks about this game because it's so much fun. So how Skull King differs from other trick-taking games that you might be familiar with, and just for those of you who don't know what trick-taking games are, generally trick-taking games are things like hearts or spades or presidents, where every player around the table usually will put in one card at a time going around the table, and then one player, based on what has been played, will collect all of the cards that were just played, and that is considered to be a trick. So that's why it's called trick taking. In Skull King, the game is played over 10 rounds, and every round, the players are dealt a number of cards equal to the round number. So in round 1, each player only gets 1 card, and then so on and so forth. So in round 10, you're getting 10 cards apiece. That makes for a very interesting game because you are bidding on how many tricks you believe you can take. And if there are 7 players and every player only has 2 cards in their hand, it can be pretty difficult to guess who's gonna win those tricks, because even if you have like a strong card in your hand, it might not be good enough. And that is also where the interesting parts of Skull King's special cards come in, because Skull King, unlike some more traditional trick-taking games, has special cards in the deck. In addition to having suits numbered 1 through 13, there are pirates, mermaids, the Skull King himself, escape cards, and a tigress. I think that's all, like that's most of the special cards. There's some other stuff that you can throw in optionally too, but I tend to not play with those. And it's kind of like a chain thing. So mermaids will beat any of the numbered cards. If any numbered card gets played, mermaids will beat those. Pirates will beat any mermaid. The Skull King will beat any pirate, but a mermaid will beat the Skull King only. That's the only thing that can beat a Skull King is a mermaid. And there's only like 2 mermaids in the entire deck. So if you have the Skull King in your hand, it's a very powerful card, but it's scary as heck. Because if you put him out, you're just like, please, please, no mermaids. So again, that like influences how you're going to be bidding on what tricks you think you can take. And you get points then based on what cards you were able to capture during the course of the round. Like you'll get bonus points for using special special cards to capture other special cards, and then you'll also get points based on whether you hit your bid or not. This is just one of those games that, like, even if things can go sideways, everybody at the table is always having a good time because you're all just waiting for that moment when something dramatic is going to happen, and it always happens. It's one of those games, and I just can never get enough of it. We recently were at the board game cafe Meepleville here in Vegas, and we played a 7-player game of Skull King, and I was just sitting there going like, oh, like, I don't have this many people around a table often enough, and I just love this game, and anybody I've ever taught it to falls in love with it nearly instantly as well. So I wanted to give it a formal review. If you've ever heard about Skull King and been curious and you like trick-taking games in any fashion, I would highly recommend you give this a try. It is available to play online on Sovereignty. If you are not familiar with what Sovereignty is, Ambie will probably kindly link something in the show notes because she's awesome. But yeah, you can play it on Sovereignty's online platform. So if you wanted to give it a try there, you could do that. But yeah, that's one of my favorite trick-taking games, Skull King. For our thematic discussion today, we are going to talk about how our gaming tastes have changed and evolved over the years. We've kind of touched on this topic on and off throughout a lot of different discussions over time, but this was one of the suggestions we got through our contest that we ran not too long ago. And so we figured dedicating an episode to it would be a good idea. And we're now not just far into our hobby gaming lives, but we're 8.5 years deep into podcasting about board games. So we've hit some milestones here.
Yeah, and if you want a long version of how our gaming tastes have changed, you can just listen to all of our podcast episodes.
That's true, actually.
But I guess we were both gaming before we started podcasting, too, and our tastes were different then, too. Like, we both gamed as kids and then as adults and as older adults.
Yeah, because I think not all hobby gamers were gamers as kids. I mean, most kids play a board game or two, you know, like, that's not uncommon. But between board games and video games, I think you and I both really liked games for most of our lives in some fashion. And for those of you who are listeners who maybe haven't been with us for a long time, we don't typically talk about who we are, like, much on the podcast. So to give you some context, I am 39 years old. I grew up in the Midwest, but I now live out in Vegas. So yeah, I had a traditional Midwestern upbringing, lots of family time and board games and things like that. So I came of age in the late 80s and 90s to give you kind of a reference point for the games I was playing when I was young.
And I am 36 years old, similar age, a little bit younger. I grew up mostly in California. Yeah, I played games with my parents and family, mostly a lot. My parents, at least my dad, liked playing games a lot, and my mom did too, like video games too. So we played board games and video games a lot. I remember like one time someone in high school was like mentioning like, do you play games a lot? Because like every time you want, you're always asked, do you want to play a game or something? Like, I guess that's like my default thing to ask, like, does anyone want to play a game or something? So that was something that I did a lot and still do.
I mean, it's fun, so why not? So my journey as far as how my tastes have changed, I went through kind of a period in my early adulthood where I wasn't gaming as much. And that wasn't for lack of wanting to, more like being an adult in the like early mid-aughts was rough. So I didn't have... I was stressed and working a lot and didn't have a lot of money. And one thing that you will learn about the board game hobby is having disposable time and disposable income do make that hobby easier. Mm-hmm. So once I did start building a collection and start gaming on my own, I definitely was kind of focused more on like family weight, entry level, gateway style games that I had played with my friends or I had been introduced to at the gaming group I played with in Kansas City before I moved out to Vegas. And there was some hobby stuff in there for sure. But it's interesting. The things I was buying on my own didn't tend to be like hardcore hobby stuff. Like I bought myself a copy of Munchkin, but I also already knew Race for the Galaxy. And so I bought that too. So I kind of had a very weird eclectic mix to begin with. And I went through a period then where I like started shunning all of the Munchkin-esque games. I think a lot of hobby gamers go through this phase where they kind of feel like they're better than certain games. And I have learned not true. That was a silly thing to think because all games generally have value. And if people enjoy playing them, no one should give them any guff for that. And I did have lots of fun playing Munchkin over the years. Like there's one of my favorite gaming moments of all time came from a game of Munchkin. So like, why would I hate on Munchkin? Like it can be a very fun time. But yeah, so I like went through like a kind of hoity-toity, like I'm better than people phase. And then I came out of that thankfully. And I had a period where I wanted to try a lot of heavier games. And then and that's like when you and I started the podcast, I was like, I need to try an 18XX game. And then you all taught me an 18XX game. And I was like, I do not want to do that again. Like, thank you very much, but no more. And I've now kind of like firmly settled into the games that I tend to love the most usually happen to be solidly medium weight, approachable, but got some good strategy games. And I do like lighter stuff too, but I tend to not go for the really deep, heavy stuff on average.
So for me, I played games in college a little bit, but didn't have much time for it. I played Dominion, and then like, I never had my own copies of this. It was like other people had it. And there was a board game club that I was not part of because I didn't have time to play. I remember they had like Galaxy Trucker and like, I don't know if they had Twilight Imperium or something, but I just remember like they had games that I did not have time to play. So I just like didn't look into them because I was very busy in college. After college, then I had time again. And so I started getting into board games myself. And with Toby, I think we started buying games. Like I didn't really start buying games until after Toby and I kind of got into games together. We both realized that we had both played like Dominion and other hobby games and liked them. And so we started buying games and we started getting like more hardcore games right off the bat. Like Toby, something about Toby is like he likes going into the deep end. Like with anything he does, he'll just try to do hardcore mode. So I think like one of the first games he got, he went into the game store and asked like, what's the super hard game that you have? And so like they recommended Arkham Horror, and so he got that. It was like really hard for him to learn the rules because his brother like walked in on him with a YouTube video open and him just lying on the bed like with the rule book and just really confused and looking very helpless.
when anyone tells a story about someone in their bedroom with a book open of some sort and their brother walks in on them, this is not usually the scenario. It's not usually trying to learn a board game rule book. Oh, but it's very Toby, yeah, Toby and his brother, I can see this 100%.
Yeah, and then like I think one of the first games I got was Mage Knight.
That was one of my first purchases too. I never learned it. I tried, I couldn't. I eventually got rid of it.
I learned it and I played it solo and I played it with Toby, but he didn't like it. So then like we got rid of it. But I remember learning it. I brought the rule books. There's two rule books in that game. So I bought that to work and then was reading it when I just had time at work. And so like I was reading the rule books and all excited and played a solo game. So that I had more time then because like, yeah, I don't have time to read rule books now.
Yeah, no, I tried learning Mage Knight and I wasn't deep enough yet at that point. Like I had learned slightly heavier games, but I had never on my own learned a game of that style from the rule book. And reading the rule book, I was just like, I was like, no. And honestly, to this day, I still do not tend to learn best just from a rule book and nothing else. Like I tend to use how to play videos or get taught from other people. And those tend to be better ways for me to learn games in general.
I'm good with the rule book. So like Mage and I could learn from the rule book, I think. That rule book is pretty, or the rule books, it was pretty comprehensive. But Arkham Horror, the rule book is not, or at least Arkham Horror 2nd Edition, the rule book was not great. But we had like a lot of experimentation, and we were like buying games. Friends would recommend a game, and then we like, okay, maybe we try this and go to the game store, look at something that looks good, and we try it. And a lot of the games that we bought at the beginning, we don't own anymore because we grew out of them or like decided we don't actually like that type of game. And then we went to a lot of conventions, and we were like, we got into Euro games, like more heavy Euros and thematic Euros. I really like Dungeon Pets, which I still like. We liked Vital Lacerda games. Kanban, that was the first one we had played and still probably my favorite Lacerda game. I haven't played a lot of his others that many times, but like we liked those. And then we played a lot of like the heavier Euros. And then at some point we got into 18XX games because our friend had played one and had 18AL, like a print and play. And so like we got into it with him and we learned it. And then Toby being Toby, dove into the deep end, started learning about all the different 18XX games, subscribed to buy all of them, or like to get the ones that he was interested in. And so, because before you couldn't get 18XX games, like they all of them were out of print and you had to get them secondhand and stuff. So he would subscribe on BGD to like see when they're available secondhand and then like try to get them secondhand. And then we also got into Winsome games, which are lighter train games. They're different than 18XX, but they're also like auction-y train games, which I don't like as much as 18XX. But
does Toby still run the website, the 18XX games website?
Yeah. I mean, he doesn't do much to run it, but it's still there and very active. Lots of people awesome. Play. But like neither Toby nor I like playing games online. So he just built that not really for him to play, but I guess for other people to play. Well, he had built Rolling Stock first, which was his favorite game. He had built that website to play with his friends. We have friends in Florida who we met from conventions. And so he had wanted to make an 18XX game thing to play with. So yeah, that happened. Yeah, after we had kids, a lot of our gaming changed. So like right before kids, we were playing 18XX a lot. And when we played 18XX, we started not playing as many heavy Euro games, especially like the new ones coming out. Like we still like the thematic ones, but like ones that are just plain themes or like themes where it's not really integrated well with the mechanics, we still don't like that much. And then like a lot of the newer ones, we just stopped wanting to learn new games as much, because with 18XX games, we could play a new one and not have to learn as many rules because it's like similar mechanism, but then a different game. So it's like not as many new rules that you have to learn. Whereas if you're learning a new Euro game, you have to relearn everything and it takes longer. So we stopped doing that. And we started playing like light party games or 18XX games. And then when we had kids, we kind of stopped playing long games because we haven't had time. I still like it when we do play it, but it's like we don't have the mental energy or the time. And so now it's mostly just like light party games. We like lots of like word party games. I like deduction games. I mean, I've always liked deduction games, but like, yeah, because of the circumstances of our life, like our tastes have kind of had to change. But
You liked real-time games before you
yeah,
had
yeah
kids,
I like real-time games but too, yeah.
I can imagine that having kids only solidifies that, because on average, most real-time games take less time to play. Because they are set, right? Like there is no yeah. like dilly-dallying in a real-time game. It's like, oh, this takes 10 minutes and that's it. Like that's the game. So
yeah. And I guess also like having kids made me realize, or I know now for sure, like what types of games I like, because with other games, it's just like I'm too exhausted. Like it's not worth it.
Yeah. Yeah. You're like, I could sleep or I could play a game. You're like, nope, sleep wins.
Yeah. So I guess we used to be more omni gamers. I mean, we still will try like any game, but I think we're more observant of when we don't like a game, or like more vocal about it, maybe. I don't know.
I definitely feel less pressure to like games. And it's not like that pressure ever came from anywhere specific. But when I was new to the hobby, internal pressure maybe, like I kind of just like felt like I should like all the games or something. And now I know better how to react when I don't like a game. Like I don't have to just be like, oh, this sucks, I hate it. Because obviously that can make for an awkward situation depending on who you're playing with, the environment you're in. Like if somebody brings a game over and they love it and you just start saying, oh, this is garbage, like that could potentially hurt that person's feelings, right? Like I would never want to do that, obviously. And so I generally can keep my feelings to myself if they are like, oh, here's a really good example. Everyone loves a game that I do not like, okay? Everybody, this just came out, what, a year or two ago? Heat, Pedal to the Metal. Mm-hmm. Everyone loves this racing game. Loves it.
I haven't played it, so.
I do not like it. I don't like racing games almost ever. So it's not like it's this game in particular, but this one just also doesn't do it for me. And I was so bored while we were playing. Like, enormously bored. But guess what? I sat there and I played the game because that's what you do when you're in common, like you're in company and you're doing the thing. But like, I was like, I know not to play this game anymore. Yeah. And it's online as well. And people have suggested to play it for our online game nights in our Discord. And I will very clearly state, if you all would like to play Heat, please do so. I will not join in on that game. I don't want to dissuade people from playing the games they want to play, but I also want to make it clear that I don't want to participate like in certain games just because I don't want to have a bad time.
Yeah, so...
But again, everybody loves that game other than me, so don't let my feelings... If you haven't played it and you like racing games, you'll probably love it, I guess.
Yeah, I guess I'm more comfortable like sitting out on a game now than I was before.
Yeah.
Like, even live, because like I could be like, oh, I'm tired, I can just watch. Yeah. I think before kids, I did that with Spyfall.
Oh, yeah.
I preferred watching too. And I remember talking about this on the podcast before. Like, I preferred watching that game to playing it. But I would sometimes play it if people needed a person to play something. But like, I prefer just watching, just because of like the way the stress felt for me was not
Spyfall
what I liked.
Is uniquely stressful. I yes, don't like different. It. I bought it when it came out because it got all the hype and everything. And I played it quite a few times. And then I was like, why am I still playing this? I don't enjoy it. Like, it's too stressful. I have to wonder, we don't really know a lot about the demographics of the people who listen to our podcast. Like, I know we have thousands of listeners, but I don't know who those listeners are. And so I would be really curious to know where the majority of our listeners are at in their gaming journeys, right? Like, are the majority of our listeners like us? Like, they've been in the hobby for a long time. If you are listening to this and you are somebody who is relatively new to board gaming, I would love, if you're willing to, if you want to reach out to us, I would love to hear from you genuinely, because I always wonder like what value we provide to people like that. Like, because we tend to just kind of, we review a game and we talk about a topic, and are those discussions valuable to people across the spectrum of experience, you know? So if somebody out there hasn't been listening to us that long or hasn't been in the hobby that long and, you know, wants to tell us that is the case, reach out to us. You can email us boardgameblitz@gmail.com or hit us up on any of our social media, or if you're in our Discord.
Yeah,
all of the places. But I think that would be neat to find out if there were people who are kind of early in their gaming journeys who happen to listen to our show, and let us know if we do provide value to you, because, you know, that would make me feel warm and fuzzy, and I like feeling warm and fuzzy.
And that's it for this week's Board Game Blitz. Visit our website, boardgameblitz.com, for more content and links. This episode was sponsored by Gray Fox Games. The world of Midgard has expanded, and now your game collection can grow with it. Pre-order your copies of Clans of Midgard and Revisit Midgard at the Card Game today at grayfoxgames.com. And don't forget that Blitzketeers get 20% off non-exclusive items by using the code BGBlitz24 at checkout. Join the Blitzketeer community on Discord for game nights, discussions, and more by following the link in the show notes. Support the show by leaving us a rating and review on your podcast provider. And if you like us a lot and want to support us monetarily and get some cool perks, check out our Ko-fi at ko-fi.com/boardgameblitz today. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Morrow. Until next time, we came and played a board game. It was on the table with a pretty label. Bye, everyone!
Bye!